where do we even begin to break down the Kansas City Chiefs' victory over the Denver Broncos on Sunday Night Football, prime time? So many positives, so many negatives for the Kansas City Chiefs, which means there's a whole lot to talk about. Welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Thank you for joining the show today. For the first time, I think ever, in the three-year history of this show, I couldn't wait until Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday to recap a game. So it is very late Sunday night or very early Monday morning, and we are going to talk about everything from this game. We're going to go through the recap, we're going to talk about the big ideas, and then at the end we're going to go through your takes and takeaways, what you said to me on Twitter after this game, what you learned about the Kansas City Chiefs tonight. We've got Justin Houston, Tyreek Hill, the upright that Cairo Santos bounced the game winner off of. Buckle up, this is a big show. I'm not completely sure what it is that we all just saw. There's something kind of inexplicable about the Kansas City Chiefs going into Denver and leaving with an overtime victory after playing a horrendous offensive game and also ending up with 30 points. There's something I can't totally rationalize about, frankly, 3.5 quarters of offensive ineptitude, total offensive ineptitude, that gets chased with required 2-minute drill kind of drives. Whenever the Kansas City Chiefs offense that we saw through this entire game was presented with the opportunity to go force overtime, and all they had to do was go the length of the field with a couple of minutes left, go score a touchdown, and then get a 2-point conversion, when that was the only thing being asked of them. You could not have sold me on that concept playing out well for the Chiefs. I didn't think they were going to win the game until after the Broncos missed their second field goal in overtime. And even then, I thought this game probably ends in a tie. And we'll go through the play-by-play. But I'm not sure we can totally rationalize what happened in this game, but we're going to try a little bit. I decided as I was preparing for this show, beyond just like, you know, the mental reps of trying to find inner peace in a way where I can try to explain what I just saw, I decided to take some facts, a few things that we can all agree on, a few things that are not subjective like so much is, and to see if we can build from there. The first fact is that this game was held in Denver, Colorado, the home of the Denver Broncos. This was a road game in a very hostile environment, a divisional matchup on the road, Sunday Night Football, prime time, giant spotlight against your biggest rival. At least I've grown up, I'm 21 years old. I've grown up with the Broncos being the real rival of the Chiefs, not the Raiders. Some of you who are older will probably have greater memories of the Chiefs-Raiders rivalry. To me, it's the Broncos. It's been the Broncos forever, from my perspective, with my incredible youth and ignorance. So the Broncos are the rival to me. This is the rivalry game. Winning in Denver each year is the one regular season playoff game whenever there actually is a head-to-head matchup to be had. And the Chiefs went to Denver and won. Now putting the Chiefs, another fact here, putting the Chiefs at 3-0 in the AFC West, with a win over every other team in the division so far. The Chiefs went into Denver and won their third consecutive AFC West game of the year. And they did it with no Jeremy Maclin, their number one wide receiver, with no Dee Ford, a guy who went into this week as tied for the lead in the NFL in sacks, with no Steven Nelson, the starting nickel cornerback, with no Jay Howard, a starting defensive end. Four impactful starters were inactive in this game. They went up against a Denver Broncos team coming off of a bye week and being at home, a team that was completely healthy with the exception of their long snapper. The only guy who missed the game was the Broncos' long snapper. A battered and broken Chiefs team. Not even mentioning guys who are out for the season. Jamaal Charles, Alan Bailey. Those guys being the two clearly most impactful guys done for the year. Real opportunities for excuses if the Chiefs wanted to make them. And so now the Chiefs have gone on the road into Denver and into Oakland and emerged with two victories. They're 3-0 in the AFC West. And at this point, I don't know if the Chiefs are any good, or if they're good enough, at least, offensively, to do a darn thing in the playoffs. I really don't know that. And I don't think you possibly can either. I don't know if the Chiefs have enough offensively to do squat and come playoff time. But I think they're going to go 5-1 or 6-0 in the AFC West. And where does that set you up? Go 5-1 or 6-0 in the AFC West, you're going to have a hard time not winning the division. What if you win the AFC West? You're behind the Patriots still probably, but you're the 2 seed? You become the 2 seed in the AFC? You've got a bye week and then home field advantage? Then you have to go to New England if New England holds up with whoever goes into Foxborough? The playoffs start getting crazy. And I do think that the Chiefs are very flawed. They're deeply, deeply flawed on offense. But right now, the defense is at what, 80% capacity right now? D. Ford, Jay Howard, and Steven Nelson were all out tonight. Dontari Poe left with having back spasms. Derek Johnson ended the game hobbling around because of his Achilles. Marcus Peters missed last week with a hip pointer. Justin Houston is in his second game back from having, like, total reconstructive knee surgery. Tom Bahali is 45 years old. Not actually, but in football years, he's 90. He's playing bone on bone in his knee. He's ancient. The defensive line is so bad. Alan Bailey's gone. We've got Raheem Nunez-Rochez, a guy who got cut earlier this year by the Chiefs. We've got him making crazy plays. Kendall Reyes, a guy that was on no one's radar. On the field making plays. A rookie in Chris Jones. Chris Jones, at least, being healthy. But a guy who wasn't supposed to start this year. The secondary, Philip Gaines, had surgery in the offseason, but he's healthy. Seems to be healthy now and is struggling, but Eric Berry's healthy. You know, after the cancer thing, that's gone now. Just a little cancer thing. Ron Parker seems to be healthy. Am I missing anybody? Daniel Sorensen, keeping it together. This defense is so battered. But if you just want to get down to the severe ones, the things that are making people miss playing time, I'm going to count Derek Johnson in that because he got beat across the middle one time tonight, and you could see him trying to chase down the tackle, and he just couldn't do it. Derek Johnson, Dontari Poe, Jay Howard, not even counting Alan Bailey, who is out for the year. Jay Howard, excuse me. D. Ford, a defensive player of the year candidate. Steven Nelson. What happens, especially if we're talking about a bye week in the playoffs, what happens if this team gets healthy? When this team rests up and is at close to 100% as you can get? It's terrifying. Last week, the Chiefs did not have a championship defense, by my standard. Last year, the Denver Broncos had a championship defense, obviously. They won a championship with their defense. The Chiefs didn't have that last week. And this week, they didn't have a championship defense. They had a very, very good defense. You know, last week, good defense. 2 weeks ago, very good defense. This week, very, very, very good defensive showing from the Chiefs here. Again, with all of those injuries. But what happens when Justin Houston and D. Ford are on the field together? Who aren't the Chiefs stopping with Justin Houston and D. Ford, and then Tom Bahali coming in with fresh legs, giving those guys a break in situational pass rushing downs? Who aren't the Chiefs stopping with both of those guys rushing the passer? If you didn't get to see the Chiefs game. I'm sorry for not doing the recap sooner. but Justin Houston showed up. And remember this whole, if you've listened to the show for a while, if you're new to the show, welcome aboard. But if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know what my theory was, what my hope and what my goal was for Justin Houston's return, who tonight had 10 solo tackles, 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss, a pass defended, and 3 more quarterback hits, which is insane. Pro Football Focus said, or Eric Eager, who said, tweeted, Justin Houston, 3 sacks, 4 hurries, 1 pass breakup, and 10 defensive stops, had a grade that almost literally went off our Pro Football Focus chart. He was almost beyond numerical grading. That's how good Justin Houston was tonight. But I said during the offseason, I've been looking at the schedule this whole time, I said, look, if at all possible, activate Justin Houston before the Tampa Bay game, have him practice. I want his first game back to just be the Tampa Bay game. That's totally fine. Let him get up to speed a little bit, get him into game shape, and then set him loose in Denver. And that is exactly what the Chiefs did, and man, did that pay off. And if he was healthier sooner, could have gotten back sooner, could have been better last week, if he would have been this week's Justin Houston against the Buccaneers, the Chiefs are probably 9-2 instead of 8-3. But I don't know, I don't think rushing him back would have done the Chiefs any good in the long term. Him being where he was tonight was the most important thing. Justin Houston, literally almost off the charts. That's another fact that we can just agree on. Another thing that it's a little more objective of a fact, but we're going to take this one as a fact. Alex Smith was bad for a long time tonight. No risks, no playmaking, not even good game managing. There was just some horrendous Alex Smith wrapped up in a horrendous offense. And again, I'll go through the recap later. But just consistently, 3rd and 7, here's a 2-yard pass to Albert Wilson or a 4-yard pass to Travis Kelce that he probably dropped anyway. Here's a 2-yard check down to, not Chris Conley. He didn't see the ball at all until, I think, the fourth quarter. But here's any pass 2 yards short of the first down marker. Infuriating Alex Smith. Jeff Favre tweeted after the game. He said, you could have convinced me to bench Alex Smith in the third quarter. But he led a touchdown drive with 3 minutes left against the best defense in the NFL. And I add parenthetically, and a 2-point conversion, which is hard. That's hard to do. Chris Clark at Chris Clark NFL on Twitter said, from the fourth quarter with 3 minutes left to play through overtime, Alex Smith, okay, 3 minutes left in the regulation and all of overtime, which went on for 15 minutes. Alex Smith was 12 for 20 for 122 yards, a touchdown, and a 2-point conversion. I've been a staunch defender of Alex Smith, not as Alex Smith is Tom Brady, not that kind of defense, but as Alex Smith is not your rightful scapegoat here. But in the third quarter, I was starting to get closer and closer to the point of, could it be worse with Nick Foles? It probably would be, but maybe at least they'd have a chance to make some plays they don't have a chance to make with Alex Smith. That was starting to creep back a little bit, and rightfully so. If you had those thoughts during the first three quarters of this game, there not only no shame on you, but I think you're probably thinking about the right kinds of things to say, how can we make this better? But I've constantly said Nick Foles is not the answer. And he's not even a better answer than Alex Smith is. But this game was a tough pill to swallow from that perspective. The last 3 minutes of the game in overtime, Alex Smith was killing it. Alex Smith was clutch. The Chiefs' offense did exactly what it needed to do. I mean, that's unbelievable. That the offense we saw at the end of the game is simply not the offense we saw to start. And I think that actually points to a larger problem of what are the Chiefs? What is the Chiefs' offense supposed to be? Why does this keep happening? Why are the last 2 drives of every loss or every losing game so much better than the drives that got the Chiefs losing? And more than anything, I think it's a pace issue and it's a what do you have to lose kind of issue. The Chiefs were playing with house money by the end of this game. So if Alex Smith slung it around a little bit and bad things happened, well, they're trying to come back, what's the worry? Or, you have to move more quickly, you have to be more aggressive and more fast-paced whenever you are playing against the other team and playing against the clock. The Chiefs need to have some of those traits a little more present in their opening offense. And if they do that, I've been saying this since literally week one. Since the Chargers game, I've been saying the Chiefs are not going to be the first half or the second half Chargers offense versus the Chargers offense. They are going to be both of those things all the time, and that has been so true. The Chiefs are just constantly alternating between Jekyll and Hyde of slow-moving, anemic offense and quick-strike comeback offense. And they need to maintain that comeback hot streak kind of offense that they've shown flashes of time and time again. We all know it's in there. We've seen it, and it's won games. It's won two divisional games. Late comeback, crazy comeback wins have won two divisional games for the Chiefs. And that's a problem. That's something that Andy Reid should have had fixed a long time ago. Probably should have been fixed over the bye, and at least should be evident that it's a work in progress now. And the first three quarters were probably the three worst quarters I've seen of Alex Smith in Kansas City, at least successively, three successive quarters. And the end of the game was one of the most exciting things I've ever seen as a Chiefs fan. And in a take and takeaway later, somebody asked, where does it rank in your memorable all-time Chiefs games or whatever? And for me, I think it's probably going to be second or third. Picking off the Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler, I think, six times, I think? That was a lot of fun. The Texans playoff win is number one for me, just because it's something I hadn't seen before, and the stakes are so important. If you take the stakes out of it, and you just say, what's the most entertaining, the most rewatchable game, the craziest, most up-and-down Chiefs game I've ever seen, it's got to be this. I don't know what holds a candle to it in the lifetime of my Chiefs fandom. I don't even know what the next best contender would be. And so I hope there's a little, there are some things to hang your hat on, some things to feel as real tangible things for the Chiefs. Here are some stats that I think also start to pull some things together, just some observations that people made on Twitter as tonight went along. Tyreek Hill, who I have barely talked about in the first 15 minutes of this show, Tyreek Hill was unbelievable in this game. And this stat, usually stats undersell how good guys were at this, or maybe oversell, over-exaggerate. Excuse me. This one's about perfect. Tyreek Hill is the first player with a rushing touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a kick return touchdown in a single game since Gale Sayers did it in 1965. Tyreek Hill had a rushing touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a kick return touchdown in the same game, which no one has done since Gale Sayers did it 50 years ago. That's incredible. Nathan Janke, at @ProFootballFocus_NathanJanke, said, Marcus Peters allowed just two catches for 19 yards all game. One thing Trevor Siemian did very well in this game was decide not to throw at Marcus Peters and then stick to your guns, and he did that. I think he was only targeted two or three times, meaning he was giving up most of the passes at him. It's because Trevor Siemian was not even testing Marcus Peters, because Trevor Siemian knew what would happen if he did. Pro Football Focus said Mitch Morse was the only Chiefs lineman tonight that did not allow a quarterback hit or sack, which is not all that surprising whenever you look back at the stat sheet and see that Alex Smith was sacked half a dozen times. And I already gave you the other stats that I really found very interesting from this game. Last thing here before we get to the actual step-by-step recap. Somebody messaged me on Twitter, tweeted me, @JBBriscoe, and said they were thinking back on my six things that the Chiefs needed to do to win in Denver that I talked about last episode, and he was saying that really at least five of them seem to be on some level seem to have been necessary and have come true in this Chiefs victory. So I wanted to run through those really quick and just sort of reevaluate where those things ended up. The first one I said, and the most important one, the key to my six things here was that Justin Houston needed to be Justin Houston again, which at the time I thought was a little bit unfair, a little bit of an unfair expectation for a guy who's one game back from major reconstructive knee surgery. Justin Houston disagreed. He thought it was completely reasonable, I suppose, because, man, he came back and he was Justin Houston, which I didn't expect. I did not expect him to come back that violently, that thoroughly. It was incredible. So that did happen. My second one is that Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce needed to have big games. Tyreek Hill, as I just mentioned, had an insane game. He ended up with 3 touchdowns, 8 receptions for 101 yards receiving, that was Travis Kelce. Pardon me. Travis Kelce, 8 receptions for 101 yards receiving. That's a big game. Tyreek Hill, 9 receptions, 52 yards, and the touchdown, and then the 1 carry for 3 yards and a touchdown, and then the punt return touchdown on the kickoff following the safety. The safety kick return touchdown. Huge game for Tyreek Hill, and a 100-yard receiving game for Travis Kelce. I'm going to give myself 2 check marks on those guys both needing to have big games. I said if Spencer Ware didn't get the ball off, then the Chiefs weren't going to win. And Spencer Ware got 17 carries in this game for 64 yards. Not a great average, and he was not a part of the passing game. Actually, at all. He didn't receive a single target out of the backfield, which is very, very uncommon for him. And this one was relatively true. He was in the game constantly. He was getting touches to keep the Broncos honest, but he was not controlling the pace of the game like I thought, but he was still an important part as far as getting touches went. Just, you know, for reference, how many is 17 carries a lot? That's exactly how many touches Kelce and Hill had combined in the receiving game. Tyreek Hill actually would have had a total of 10 touches on the offensive side, and Kelce had 8. So Kelce plus Tyreek Hill, about as many touches as Spencer Ware got. The next thing that I said the Chiefs had to do here, that if the offense stumbled in the red zone again, the Chiefs weren't going to win. Well, this was reasonably successful as well. Early in the game was a problem. The defense and special teams were doing the scoring. Tyreek Hill, though, in the red zone, got the conversion. And the Chiefs didn't settle for field goals until overtime, which was a perfectly fine time to settle for a field goal. An incredible success there. A nice step up. The Chiefs had a really hard time getting to the red zone, so calling it an incredible success is definitely overselling it. But whenever the Chiefs got there, they scored. And the last one was that if the secondary didn't make Trevor Siemian's day miserable, the Chiefs weren't going to win. And that one did not come true, at least not in the way that I expected to, where Marcus Peters or Ron Parker or Eric Berry or Philip Gaines are picking the ball off. Marcus Peters made everyone's day miserable that he was lined up against because they just weren't getting targeted. Philip Gaines made my day miserable a couple of times. And overall, the secondary was definitely more about controlling the damage than it was about making Trevor Siemian absolutely miserable. Siemian threw for 368 yards on only 20 completions. That's over 10 yards per attempt, or 10 yards per attempt. It's 34 attempts and almost 370 yards. 3 touchdowns, sacked 5 times. A really fantastic passer rating. But overall, it just didn't do enough. Devontae Booker on the ground, 24 carries for 79 yards. The Chiefs did a pretty good job containing the run game for the most part. The longest run in the game for the Broncos was Trevor Siemian's 14-yard scramble. Receiving, Emmanuel Sanders was the terror. 7 receptions for 162 yards and a touchdown, a 64-yard long being his top reception. He beat Philip Gaines badly twice. For that big play, and then for the touchdown on back-to-back plays, or at least on the same drive. A really difficult day for Philip Gaines late in the game. But as we go into the recap here, I got to look back again and say, the Chiefs went into Denver, had a terrible offensive showing, scored 30 points, gave up 27 to the Broncos in overtime. And now the Chiefs are 8-3. They're second in the AFC West after the Raiders won against the Panthers. They're second in the AFC West, a full game up over the Broncos, and they have the tiebreaker. It's for all of the terrible things that the offense did or didn't do to start the game. The special teams was phenomenal. The defense is taking huge strides. Justin Houston looks so good. D Ford's not even back yet. my optimism is being rekindled on the defense and special teams side of this team. Now it's going, again, back to Andy Reid to say, pick up the pace of your offense. You revive the offense, and this team is a genuine Super Bowl threat. If the offense looks like it did in the first three quarters of this game, then you might as well pack it in, because your entire goal is to get a wild card game and then to go to Oakland or to go to New England. I guess if that's only if you win a game, because they're both going to have byes. So you go to Pittsburgh, groan, or you go to Tennessee or Houston or Indianapolis, and that's your contention. You can go there and just play great defense. That might work for one game. It's not going to work for an actual Super Bowl run. They have to produce more on offense than they did in this game tonight, by a long shot. New listener or longtime listener, you either do or should know about Patreon.com. Over at Patreon.com, Patreon.com/RTK, you can sign up to be a monthly donor of this show. You give a little bit of money each month to keep this show rolling twice a week, to keep it free for everyone, except for people who voluntarily offer to help fund the show. And I am hugely appreciative of the ability not only to be able to make the show for a little bit of money, and then to be able to invest back into the show, like for this beautiful Blue Yeti microphone that I bought during last Black Friday sales, but also so I can, you know, put food on the table and survive through these tough times. And I could not do it without you guys who are supporting the show through Patreon. Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44, Andy Simpson, Randy Singh at Randy_Singh_, Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy, and Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. Those are the $20 group, guys. They are rock stars. $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander and Todd Sullivan at Tito Solovino. Also a couple of fantastic supporters of this show. Also $5 group, Josh Beadle. That's at patreon.com/RTK. Cannot thank you enough for supporting the show financially. Kansas City Chiefs 30, Denver Broncos 27 in overtime. Once again, the Kansas City Chiefs go to 8-3, one game back, maybe a half game back with a tiebreaker, really, of the Oakland Raiders. The Denver Broncos fall to 7-4. The Chiefs 3-0 in the AFC West. The Chiefs went into this game without Jeremy Macklin, without D Ford, without Steven Nelson or Jay Howard, all inactive in this game. The Chiefs won the toss and elected to defer. It was a good start for the Chiefs. They got pressure on Simeon, led to a little check down that DJ turned into a loss of two. Then Simeon went to Demaryius Thomas in front of Ron Parker. 3rd and 1, the Chiefs snuffed the run as Justin Houston got around the edge and got to the back. This was important because the Chiefs have struggled so badly on getting off the field on 3rd down. To do it right out of the gate for the Chiefs was very encouraging. And then the Broncos had a great punt. Hill's return was awful, but a 10-yard holding penalty forced a repunt. And then instead of starting inside the 5, Hill barely got tripped up across the 30. If his shoes were half a size smaller, that would have been a touchdown, but he ended up getting his scores later on. The Chiefs started on the 36, a 30-yard field position gain because of that holding call. So the Broncos punt, and the Chiefs start with a 2-yard run with Spencer Ware, then 2 more from Ware. Then the Broncos brought 6 to pressure Smith, and you will not believe what happened next. Yes, you will. Alex Ithery, 3-yard pass to the feet of Albert Wilson, 3 yards short of the marker and about a foot too low to be catchable. Now, and Alex Smith, I'm a fan of yours, generally. I think we could get along. I think I support you most of the time. But Alex, don't throw 3-yard passes on 3rd and 6. Stop it. You did it all game. Stop doing that, especially to the feet of Alberta Gator Arms Wilson. I can't deal with that anymore. It's entirely too much. Also, whenever you have 6 rushing, someone is going to be open. That always happens. It's just a numbers game. Smith has got to get better at finding that guy. Chiefs punt back. The Broncos then went for 2 yards on the ground twice. On 3rd and 4, Justin Houston gets his first sack of the day. The 35-yard punt went out of bounds at the 50. The Broncos punt. The Chiefs get the ball with great field position, starting at midfield for the Chiefs' offense. 1st down, Smith rolled right and hit Travis Kelce in the hands. Kelce was confused by the first quarter target, and I believe, and that's why he slapped the ball into the ground. It was a drop, but I like the idea better, that Travis Kelce was just simply startled. On 2nd down, play action went right to Spencer Ware. It was a slide left check down to Hill then for 6. On 3rd and 4, Kelce and Ware both lined up in the backfield and then walked up to those kind of wide tight end spots the Chiefs do sometimes outside of the down tight ends. Smith went deep to Hill down the sideline. He was matched up with Tlaib step for step. And Chris Harris Jr. tackled Travis Kelce, and the Chiefs got a free first down, actually, on that holding penalty on that play. So then it was first down. Ware went for four, then Ware went for seven, and then another first down was picked up. On first down, again, empty backfield. Smith was chased by Shaq Barrett up on Mitchell Schwartz and threw it away. Smith needed to get rid of the ball, though. Then on second and ten, play action screen to Hill. It was super well blocked by the offensive line, but Wilson's block lasted a little bit too long, and he hit a little bit too soon. So that's a penalty, moving the Chiefs back 10 yards. Second and 20, Nile Davis came into the game. Smith got hammered by Von Miller and hit Travis Kelce in the hands, and Kelce dropped it again. Then on third and 20 was an infuriating 2-yard pass to Albert Wilson, which became a theme of the offense early on. For all of the struggles, this was one of the most infuriating things about it. These short passes with an incredible amount of yardage to go beyond where the pass actually landed. Colquitt came in for the punt, kicked it into the end zone, an 18-yard net on the Chiefs' punt. Really, really ugly. But the Chiefs' defense held up on the other side then again, because on first down, Trevor Siemian threw it over Emmanuel Sanders. Phillip Gaines got a 5-yard holding penalty after disrupting the route. It was a fine call. Then first down for the Broncos at the 25-yard line, Siemian threw an absolute strike to Sanders, working on Gaines for 14. Then Bibbs up the middle went for 7, got train-wrecked by Eric Berry. And I tweeted this during the game. Eric Berry is not playing football. Eric Berry is playing human whack-a-mole. This whole game was incredibly physical, and it made me appreciate the Chiefs' defense even more than I had before. And maybe it's because Houston came back and other guys were just also getting up to a new intensity level in prime time or whatever. But Eric Berry, more than anybody else, was just hitting guys differently. Just incredible, incredible tenacity there. So then, second and three for the Broncos. A false start on Emmanuel Sanders moves to the second and eight. Kenneth Acker had a really nice open field tacker after getting beaten. But then on third and two, Raheem Nunez-Roches and really the whole defensive line won the play. But R&R got the tackle. The Broncos then punt to the 13. Then the Chiefs give the ball to the Chiefs field the punt. Ware gets a run for seven. Followed up by Smith going to Kelce on a screen for 15. First down. I was really glad to see at this point Smith going back to Kelce. You cannot have Smith losing confidence in him early on in games. You've got to keep targeting Kelce, and Smith did, although it was a while before it really paid off. Then a little naked screen to Albert Wilson went for four. Second and six, a little sweep action play, Ware up the gut for four. Then on third and two, Ware up the gut again for three, and the first down. Then on first down, the Chiefs went back to the play action. A little play action pass left, Smith goes right, throws back left, and it was tipped up. Then on first and there's a penalty. Then on first and 15, naked screen to James O'Shaughnessy. Second and 16, Spencer Ware for a loss of one. Third and 16, Albert Wilson for two. So to recap that, if you missed what I just said, first and 15, a screen to your number three tight end. Second and 16, run up the gut. Third and 16, Albert Wilson for two. It felt like we were all getting punked by Andy Reid. Again, just some unbelievably questionable play calling, and I think genuinely, if we weren't talking about Andy Reid, we'd be talking about whoever was calling plays for the Chiefs giving up play calling duties. And because of the offense's struggles, as well as the game ended, and as great as the result is, and as exciting as this whole game was, we need to make sure we give equal time to, oh my goodness, this offense can't do anything. Because that's genuinely where they were. There was total ineptitude across the board on offense. The line didn't hold up. Alex Smith didn't hold up. The run game was not being aggressive enough. The play calling was terrible. The offense has got to be fixed. So the Chiefs punt. Then on first down, Chris Jones gets called for encroachment. And the next couple of plays, a couple of run plays for the Broncos pick up a first down. Nice tackle by Justin Houston on first down. Then on second and nine, pressure on Trevor Siemian, and Kenneth Acker is playing the nickel, covering Demaryius Thomas in the slot. A great bat away by Acker, who had a really up-and-down game. Third and nine, though, the Chiefs having a hard time getting off the field on third down again. Siemian had some time. Chris Jones just about got to him. But Siemian then hit Sanders for 20 yards up on Kenneth Acker again. Another first down for the Broncos. First down, then a moonshot missed Siemian after Ty Sembralo got clowned by Justin Houston. This was ugly for Sembralo. First and 20, Houston got the pressure again. Then Kendall Reyes sacked Siemian with one arm while still being blocked. It was superb. on 2nd and 20, then a draw for 4 got the Broncos to 3rd and 16, and then Houston got another sack. Honestly, Houston versus Sombrallo was one of the ugliest matchups I've seen in recent NFL memory. It was aggressive, and they're spending time on the broadcast talking about how much Justin Houston was blowing him out of the water, and it was obvious. You could see it happening. So the Broncos punt twice again after a Broncos holding penalty. Hill got to the 34-yard line on it. Then on first down, Smith went to Hill. The pass was tipped up. 2nd and 10, Niall Davis went for 2 on a play-action sweepy thing. Then on 3rd and 8, Smith ran for his life from a 6-man rush and threw it away. And the Chiefs punted again. 3 and out. The offense simply wasn't moving. But the Broncos returned man muffed the punt. DeAnthony Thomas and Daniel Sorensen brought him down to the 5. Good field position for the Chiefs on defense. Donald Stevenson came in at right tackle to deal with Justin Houston. Then on first down, Booker ran for 3 right at Tamba. 2nd and 7, Simeon went to nobody. And then on 3rd and 7, Justin Houston went to the other side. He was not up against the right tackle, which was Sombrallo, now ex-Chief Donald Stevenson. He was not lined up on Donald Stevenson. He was lined up on the left tackle, Russell Okung. And he got to Trevor Siemian and took him down for a safety, making it a 2-0 Chiefs lead. Then the Broncos had to punt it to Hill after the safety. He fielded it at the 14, hesitated for just a moment to see the play unfolding a little bit. Then he saw a lane open up on the return and just ran past everybody and then ran away from everybody. And it was gone. He was gone, and it was so good. DeAnthony Thomas was running behind him, and Hill slowed up and motioned at DeAnthony Thomas as they were getting close to the end zone. And then Dat ran over to him, and they high-fived like inside the 5 and running across the goal line. It was my favorite possible thing. Also, Hill had to slow way down to let DeAnthony Thomas catch up. DeAnthony Thomas is the 2nd fastest guy on the team. Like, it's just incredible. So that makes it 9-0 Chiefs in incredible fashion. The Chiefs scored 9 points in, like, 20 seconds without the offense ever stepping on the field. It was amazing. So the Broncos get the ball back. They run twice to get to 3rd and 1. And a pitch to Booker was good for 7 in the first down, but Booker fumbled and the Chiefs didn't challenge it. It would have been very close, but I think it would have been worth a challenge. At this point, Justin Houston went to the locker room with a shoulder injury, and shocking no one, the Denver Broncos passing game picked up. On first down, Sanders picked up a gain of 14 and a 15-yard bonus for a helmet-to-helmet hit from Eric Berry. Then Simeon went to Sanders again for 8, a run for 2, got the first down. Then on the next play, Simeon scrambled away from Chris Jones and found Demaryius Thomas for 9. The Broncos were driving. 2-minute warning hits in the half. On 2nd and 1, the Broncos were going to pass, but a false start moved them back 5 yards. 2nd and 6, Gaines and Sanders were matched up, and they both almost caught it. Gaines just about had the pick, diving right in front of Emmanuel Sanders. It was a great play, pass broken up. Then on 3rd and 6, the pass was batted up by Kendall Reyes' helmet, and the Broncos were held to just a field goal. 9-3 Chiefs, and then Justin Houston returned to the sidelines. A good showing by the Chiefs in the red zone whenever they were really in risk of getting a little bit too close for comfort as they headed in to halftime. The Broncos kicked it off out of the back of the end zone, and Von Miller beat Mitchell Schwartz and grabbed Smith's arm. It was so close to a disastrous strip sack. If he grabs a little bit higher on Smith's arm, or if he could reach the ball there, Von Miller, the Broncos could have been talking about going into halftime up 10-9, which would have been, again, completely disastrous because of how long it took the Chiefs offense to do anything at all. A short run by Tre'Quan West made it 3rd and 13. In an empty backfield, Smith gets sacked by Miller again. The Broncos called their last timeout, and the Chiefs punted. Then Simeon threw a miss to Thomas, and Eric Berry whacked him again because Eric Berry spent the first half, like I said earlier, playing human whack-a-mole just violently. Then Derek Johnson joined in, broke up a pass to Booker by breaking up Booker, and then the Broncos picked up a handful, got to 4th and 2, and Andy Reid called a timeout to try to get Hill another return shot, but Denver punted out of bounds, and the Chiefs took a knee, going into halftime up 9-3. And the Chiefs started with the ball out of the half because they deferred on the kickoff. So they started with the ball and started with 1st and 15 after an illegal shift, and then a 0-yard pass to Tyreek Hill for nothing. Then on 2nd and 14, Smith under pressure ran for 3, and 3rd and 11, why even bother? A 3-yard pass through the hands of Demetrius Harris, who just couldn't catch couldn't catch a cold, couldn't catch a break, couldn't catch, I don't know what something really easy to catch is, but Demetrius Harris couldn't catch it. Later, he caught something very important. But the Chiefs punt, and again, third and long, is met with a three-yard pass that doesn't even get close to working. That's one of the most infuriating things about this offense, and I winning does not justify how this offense played this game, because they shouldn't have been able to win this game the way they did. I'm obviously, not that they didn't deserve to win it, they made the plays when they needed to. But if you play this game 100 times with that philosophy, I think the Chiefs win, like, I don't know, 20 of them. So 20% of these games they win with this strategy, maybe fewer. You have to be willing to be more aggressive, especially on third and long. Now, I didn't want to see Alex Smith be more aggressive against these corners. That would have been terrifying, but it probably needed to happen. No, definitely needed to happen. But seeing Chris Harris and Aqib Talib have chances to make plays on some unconfident Alex Smith passes, I was not lusting for that. I wasn't hoping to see that become a part of my day, but it's something that probably definitely needed to happen. The Chiefs got away with it, though. So the Chiefs punt, the Broncos then run for a few, Derek Johnson leaves the field, and on 2nd and 7, the first play without DJ, a big run up the middle went for 13, DJ Alexander, his replacement, got badly held on that play. Then on 1st down, Justin Houston batted the ball right out of Simeon's hands, then Booker went for 5, and on 3rd and 5, Kenneth Acker refused to turn his head around and matched up against Demaryius Thomas. Simeon had time, big 1st down there, then 1st down at the 18, Houston stuffed the run. Houston was impossible to stop this game because the Broncos couldn't even run at him. Maybe he's unstoppable all the time because of this. You can't even just run at Justin Houston. And this is true for Von Miller too. But if you want to beat elite pass rushers who would just put their hand on the ground and just sprint forwards, one of the best ways to do that generally is to run at them. Give a lead blocker put a lead blocker in his direction and make him stop the run. Justin Houston's one of the best one of the best run stuffers on this team, not to mention definitely the best pass rusher, although, you know, D Ford's magic has hopefully not run out. But Houston was just fantastic across the board here. 2nd down, DJ Alexander explodes through the gap to stop the run for a loss. Timeout Denver. Then on 3rd and 13, Ron Parker, Road Derby, the tight end, down for 12. But 4th and 1, then Simeon snuck it, and it was close, but the ref said he got it. Collinsworth disagreed. On the replay, it looked like he didn't get it, but you've got to go for 4th and 1. I'm always going to defend that if you're a head coach. Not just because 7 points are worth more than 3 points, but because of the rest of the odds involved and opposing field position and everything. Most of the time, going for it on 4th and 1 is a nice call, I think. And the Broncos get it. Then Derek Johnson returns somewhere in here. 1st and goal, Booker went for 2 up to the 6. 2nd down, Phillip Gaines with a vengeance. Lined up on his guy in the slot, just swatted the ball away. 3rd down, Houston traced Simeon to the left boundary. Then Simeon came barreling back to the right. He hit Jordan Taylor, toe-tapping up against the boundary in the end zone. A really fantastic play by Simeon and Taylor. An infuriating play to watch because he just had no business making that throw. And the Broncos take the lead for the first time. Broncos up 10-9. And it seemed like maybe for a minute the Chiefs offense might have had a little bit of a sense of urgency reinjected into the game. Ware started by going for 5, and Smith hit Kelsey for 15. Then Ware got 3 more yards. Smith missed Kelsey on 2nd and 7. Then on 3rd and 7, a blitz, and Smith got blitzed, and Smith finally had the hot read to Kelsey, who picked up 8. That has to be more prevalent on 3rd and anything. You're probably going to get pressured by the Broncos. You've got to have your eyes going to a guy who's going to run a route that goes beyond the 1st down marker, or at least gives him the chance to get beyond the 1st down marker. Then 1st down, Smith went to Ware in the air for about 8. Then Ware, falling to the ground, put on a little juke move on TJ Ward for a total of 18 yards on that play. It was a beautiful little move by Spencer Ware, super underappreciated. Then Ware lined up way deep in the backfield, gave the offensive line some time to move to get the blocks, and Ware got 6. Then a screen to Hill, lost 2 after 2 blockers failed to block 3 defenders. I think it was Demetrius Harris and Albert Wilson off the top of my head who blocked their guys, but there were 3 guys lined up over there, and Hill couldn't escape him. Then 3rd and 6, Smith hit DeAnthony Thomas on the way to the sideline, and that got stopped a couple yards short as it happens. Santos lined up for a 35-yard field goal and nailed it. It looked like it was going to be 12-10, Chiefs. But the Broncos, over the commercial break, they realized that the referees called. The Broncos lined up seven guys on one side of the long snapper, which is illegal now. It's an illegal formation for player safety somehow. And it's an illegal formation now in the NFL. It's been that way for a couple of years. And the Chiefs got a free first down and got to the Denver 12-yard line, and they made the most of it. It started off with a direct snap to Spencer Ware with Smith out wide. He faked a handoff to Tyreek Hill, who was heading to the sidelines on a little sweep kind of looking thing. Not really a sweep. It was a handoff, but kind of a run to the sidelines and then try to turn the corner run. But he didn't hand it to him. Ware kept it and went for six up the middle. Then on second and four, Smith went to Ware for three. And then on third and one, the Wildcat came back again. This time, it was set up perfectly by the first down call. This time, Ware did give the handoff to Tyreek Hill, who stretched it wide right and barely got around a diving Von Miller and turned it up for the touchdown. Miller stuttered right at the point of the handoff. It was super gutsy to go to him. A great block by Albert Wilson got Hill around that corner. And Hill's the only guy on the team making that play. Anybody else is getting stopped by Von Miller, and everybody else is probably also getting stopped somewhere between Miller and the goal line. I didn't like this actual call. I would have been happy to see Ware get two more snaps right up the middle if he would have wanted that, or if that would have been what it would have taken. Because the Chiefs weren't in third and goal. It was third and one from inside the five. I think I can't remember words. I think it was a four, on the four. You've got to just move the ball forward here. And on the touchdown play, the first move for Tyreek Hill, and really the first like 10 steps, were all running sideways. I don't like seeing horizontal plays in the red zone. It's bothersome all the time. But in this case, it worked. The Chiefs go up 16-10. Then on first down after the kickoff for the Broncos, Emmanuel Sanders was wide open and Trevor Siemian sailed it over him. And we go into the fourth quarter, skip ahead to third and four. Siemian got the ball to Norwood, but Acker knocked the ball out of his hands, forcing a Denver punt, a nice three and out for the Chiefs. And the Chiefs get the ball back, and oh boy. First down, Sherman came back into the game, where it went for nothing. I was glad to see Sherman try to get re-involved because the run game really was struggling. The whole offense was really struggling, but I thought maybe that would spark the running game a little bit. Second and nine, Smith pump faked and then took a sack. And then on third and 13, Smith ran left and tucked the ball away and then went down for a sack and a loss of three. It was very confusing. I hated it so much. And that was really, we're talking early fourth quarter. And I truly was thinking for the first time, if Nick Foles was brought into the game, I wouldn't be upset about it as I would have been earlier. I wouldn't have made the switch there, and I'm glad Andy Reid didn't. But if he would have there, I would have been like, yeah, that makes sense. Alex Smith can't do anything today, anything at all. So I understand. I understood those frustrations, and I still do. Then DeMarcus Robinson flinched and on the punt and moved the punt back a little bit. Colquitt's heels were in the back of the end zone. The Chiefs punted, and the high punt bounced off of the face mask of Norwood with DeAnthony Thomas sprinting at him, and James Winchester got the recovery. And just like that, the Chiefs have their best offensive play of the day on the fumble recovery on the muffed punt. So it's the Chiefs' ball, and they have a great chance to do something here. They get the ball, I think, right at the 50, if memory serves. Holding is calling, they're on to Vernay Tardif. First and 20, a well-blocked screen to Ware got 14. Then on second and six, Mitchell Schwartz got whipped by Von Miller for another sack on a play that was supposed to be a quick screen. Like, getting sacked on that play is kind of inexplicable. Then on third and 13, the Chiefs ran out of play clock and called a timeout, and as if that play was going to matter at all, just wasting a timeout there. Smith threw, fulfilling everyone's expectations, Smith threw a nice little 6-yard worthless cross to Travis Kelce with no potential of him actually picking up the first down, and the Chiefs punt it back. Houston stopped the run in the backfield. On second down, Siemian hit Emmanuel Sanders deep perfectly right over the top of Philip Gaines for 64 yards. And then Gary Kubiak, though, earned a 15-yard penalty by standing on the sideline and getting hit by a referee. That was kind of funny. But then First and 10 inside the 40, Booker gets 3, and then on 2nd and 7, another dime from Simeon to Sanders over Phillip Gaines again. This one good for a Broncos touchdown, and on the point after, the Broncos take the lead, 17-16. Phillip Gaines got absolutely roasted on those two plays. He kind of just got outran on the first one. On the second one, he was looking at the quarterback when the ball was literally beginning to touch the hands of Emmanuel Sanders. Just no chance at all for Phil Gaines. That was super ugly. And I am worried about him just as a corner right now. Marcus Peters was amazing in this game. So it was Phillip Gaines and Kenneth Acker that got targeted all the time. Interesting to see Acker, by the way, jump up the depth chart, I think, a little bit over DJ White. I did not expect to see that, but I feel like we saw more Kenneth Acker than DJ White on Sunday Night Football. And then, so then the Chiefs get the ball back, and with a chance, maybe I would say a need to go get a field goal, they simply fail. And again, in perfect rhythm with their previous offensive stands. First and 10 from the 25, Denver jumps off sides. Alex Smith used the free play to throw it for 5 yards to Hill, who got 9. Meh. Second and 1, Ware gets the first down. First down, play action pass deepish to Travis Kelce. Not a perfect throw, but Kelce had to catch it. Third drop of the day. Second down, Niall Davis handoff for 3. Okay, not really sure why you would bother. Fine, whatever. This is just how it works here. And then on 3rd and 7, completely unsurprisingly, a 0-yard pass to Travis Kelce. Because that's what the Chiefs do on 3rd down, apparently. That's just what the offense is. The Chiefs punt. Again, Denver started with the ball on their own 6. 1st and 10, handoff, loss of a yard. 2nd and 11, handoff, loss of another yard. 3rd and 11, Simeon drop back, backpedals away from pressure, and hit Derby for 13. The Chiefs defense just could not get off the field on 3rd down. Then it's the first half for the Broncos there. 1st down, Nunez Roches destroys the back for a loss. 2nd and 11, Sanders false start moves them to 2nd and 16. Simeon escaped the pocket and dove for a gain of 14. Then on 3rd and 2, Phillip Gaines could not find the ball. The pass was even interceptable, but it was a 76-yard touchdown over Gaines' head as Simeon avoided pressure on a huge blitz. Also, I think I just realized that I misdiagnosed the other touchdown given up by Phillip Gaines on the previous drive, because Gaines got whipped twice in the previous drive, and then this one was the one where it went right over Gaines' head, and Gaines just could not locate the ball. The other two times were other, also still his fault, being terrible in coverage. Got burned 3 times for a monster play and 2 touchdowns in that series, in those 2 series there for Phillip Gaines, which was just really, really, really ugly. And then at this point, 24-16, the game was over. The game was over. You're down 8 points, and you have an offense that hasn't done anything all day, all night. And then now the Chiefs, they were using their timeouts. So now the Chiefs get the ball back with 3 minutes and no timeouts. And they start off this drive that has to go for a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. They start it with another sack. And on 2nd and 17, a Chris Conley 0-yard pass picked up 7. Then on 3rd and 10, again, I think at the beginning of the end here, Smith hit Travis Kelce for the first down. Then on 1st down, Smith went to Conley for 13 on the two-minute warning hit. And at this point, we're two successful plays into the drive. And again, I'm asking, where were those passes this whole entire game? Where were the 10 and 13-yard targets? Or even just the short passes that go for 10 and 13. Maybe a little bit of prevent defense by the Broncos, but Wade Phillips wasn't changing that much. And this happens every week. This has been happening since week 1, where the first version of the Chiefs offense we see is terrible, and then the panicked version of the Chiefs offense shows up. And Andy Reid just needs to play panicked offense all the time. So the Chiefs continue to move, but with very little optimism from me. Travis Kelce draws a 5-yard holding penalty on not much, but I'm not going to complain about it. Then Von Miller jumped off sides. Minute 51 yet left, 43 yards to go. Smith went to Hill for 8. Then a pass to a double-covered Kelce in the middle of the field, thankfully dropped, because why bother? Or at least it was broken up. Maybe he dropped it on purpose. And then Smith did it again the next play, across the middle for nothing. Although this time I think it actually was completed. I can't remember. Then it's third and one, a six-yard pass to Chris Conley as time just bleeds out. Gets the Chiefs inside the 20 with 40 seconds left. Smith went to the end zone at Conley. It was batted away perfectly by Aqib Talib, but a 5-yard penalty on Denver helped out. 35 seconds, 14 yards to go. Smith hit Albert Wilson in the end zone, but out of bounds. An incomplete tip to the line of scrimmage pass went to West for no reason. Again, just no aggressiveness there at all. 25 seconds left. Then on 3rd and 10, he targeted Wilson in the end zone. Not close, but if Wilson breaks out of that cut as he should have, I think it's a touchdown. Out of the cut, he just was not moving. Then on 4th down, Smith got hit and then hit Tyreek Hill with a strike for 11 yards as Hill was approaching the first down marker, probably a 9-yard pass, and then Hill danced across the first down marker as he went out of bounds, avoiding a tackle that could have ended the game right there. That's a 4th and 10 conversion in the red zone. 15 seconds left. Alex Smith then hit Tyreek Hill, infuriatingly, right on the goal line. And he kind of bobbled the ball for the last quarter inch, and after originally being ruled down at the 1-inch line, the call was overturned, saying that he didn't have possession when he was first tackled, that he didn't have possession until the ball was crossing the goal line. And it was a Tyreek Hill touchdown, bringing the Chiefs within two in a drive I just didn't see coming at all. No one did, and the offense was not good enough. It was not good enough on Sunday. But man, you've got to appreciate a 3-minute drive with no timeouts to take it from a kickoff all the way back for a touchdown. It was some amazing execution with their backs up against the wall. But then the 2-point conversion, I was seeing this playing through my head over and over. A quick strike to Alex Smith that gets dropped by somebody, just gets batted away as he tries to force into Travis Kelce. And on the 2-point conversion, the Chiefs had to pick up 2 yards. Alex Smith had an option. He rolled right, and Demetrius Harris kind of blocked off of the line and then broke right, getting rid of his defender and caught a contested pass for the conversion. Demetrius Harris, who I believe hadn't caught anything in 3 weeks. Literally, that's not even a joke. I just don't think he caught a pass in 3 weeks. And all of a sudden, it's a tie game going into overtime, 24-24. The Broncos get the ball first. First down is a run for 7 yards. Second and 3, Riquinez Rochez gets penetration. The run goes for 2. Then on 3rd and 1, on the blitz, Peters was targeted for the first time. Thomas gets the conversion, and then Barry cleans up on the tackle. First down for the Broncos, then on first down, Gaines made a play on the ball. Ramique Wilson almost had the ball short on an interception in the lane. And on first, and then on 2nd and 10, a delayed handoff up the middle went for 2. 3rd and 8, a chance to get off the field here. Pressure by Jones, Booker gets into space out of the backfield, and Booker was wide open after beating Derek Johnson badly in coverage. This was that play I referred to earlier where DJ just looked slow. It looked like his Achilles was bothering him. He just could not keep up. He could not cover Booker, and he could not chase him down. First down for the Broncos. Then a loss of 2 on the ground. Booker just tripped. 2nd and 12. Lots of bodies push at Simeon, and it did not work. Acker hugged Demaryius Thomas, and the Broncos got the ball to the 20-yard line. The game just absolutely and undeniably slipping away here. First down for the Broncos. Then Kenneth Acker gets the tackle for no gain on the next play. 2nd and 10. Houston flushed Simeon out of the pocket and chased him down. Simeon gained 1 yard on the play. Then on 3rd and 9, a chance to keep the game alive here, because if they scored a touchdown, it ended. 3rd and 9. Tom Bahali ran Russell Okung all the way into Simeon for the sack. The Broncos hit a 44-yard field goal to go up 27-24 in overtime. And the Chiefs get the ball, and they have to go score here. They a touchdown, and they win. A field goal, and the game stays alive, and they know that. So, DeAnthony Thomas fields the kickoff. He actually terrifyingly hesitated in the end zone and then brought it out. But he got the ball to the Chiefs' 35-yard line. A 12-man penalty on Denver moved it to the 40-yard line. 1st and 5, Ware went for 1. 2nd, Second and four, empty backfield. Smith went to Hill for five and a first down. First and 10, Hill went in motion. West got the handoff for two, which was not good enough. Second and 8, and a nice pass under pressure goes to Travis Kelce. Kelce catches it. It's a brilliant play. 21 yards and a first down. Truly a tremendous catch by Kelce, who had been really, really struggling to hold onto the ball in this game. First down. Ware turns a loss into a gain of 7. Second and 3. Hill goes into motion again. West for 4 and the first down. Hill was going into motion just every play for a little while. And then on first down, Nile Davis handoff, God only knows why, goes for 1 yard. Second and 9, empty backfield. Miller hits Smith's arm while he's passing. Nothing. Third and 9, Chiefs timeout. I have no optimism in my soul at this point. Ware's in the backfield. Smith gets pressure. He throws it to Kelce, who could not get around on the pass. And Santos comes in for a 37-yard field goal. Even here, my pessimism was showing. I was thinking, man, Santos missing this would be, or Santos maybe bouncing off an upright, would be just devastating, and he would get blamed for a loss that had nothing to do with him. So the Chiefs get the field goal. It's 27-27, and I'd been saying on Twitter this whole time, and it went off and on for Bob Sutton, I didn't want to see the Chiefs blitzing anymore. I want to see them sell out defensively to cover the pass catchers, create some coverage sack opportunities, give Justin Houston some time to work. Houston, with a little bit of time, is going to get Simeon, but Simeon, whenever the blitz doesn't land, is going to find one of those open guys against a corner that is not as good as he is. So that was the dead horse I was beating, especially in overtime, a little bit of the fourth quarter. Broncos get the ball back. First down, they get away with holding up the middle. Simeon runs for 8. Second and 2, Booker gets the first down. First down, Simeon is pressured. Skips one to Thomas. Second and 10, Bibbs goes for 7. It could have been even worse. Then on third and 3, Denver calls a timeout. Simeon has time. It goes to A.J. Derby against Daniel Sorensen for 10 yards. An infuriating another first down on third down. Then it's first and 10 at the 44. Bibbs goes for no gain. Second and 10. A pass batted up by Chris Jones, forcing third and 10. This time, Gaines went stride for stride with Fowler one-on-one. And man, it was terrifying, but incomplete. That time, Sutton sold out on the blitz. He brought the house and made Gaines play one-on-one, which had been going very, very poorly, but Gaines held his own that time. Then McManus went out and lined up for the 62-yard field goal, and this is really interesting because the Broncos were kicking from their own 48-yard line, the far side of midfield. A 62-yard field goal in Mile High is not totally unreasonable. Brandon McManus kicking long field goals is not at all unreasonable. I think he said before the game his range was 60 yards, but a 62-yarder was very interesting because what the Broncos were doing here, and Gary Kubiak knew this, there wasn't a whole lot of time left on the clock, and the Chiefs' offense, I don't think, was ever going to run another, or was ever going to roll another 80 yards, 75 yards, or maybe even 90, depending on the punt. So the Broncos could have punted it and just about locked up a tie, and frankly, maybe even had a better chance of getting something like a safety or forcing a big mistake with the Chiefs pinned way back. They could have punted it, almost definitely guaranteed a tie, and maybe had a 2% chance for a victory. Or they could kick the field goal, maybe a 30% chance the field goal is good. But then if they don't get the field goal, the Chiefs get the ball on the 48-yard line, only have to go maybe 25 yards to get into Jairo Santos' field goal range. Gary Kubiak decided to kick it, and it was gutsy, and I don't mind it. I don't fault him for trying to win. I know that Andy Reid would not have bothered there. I know Andy Reid would have went ahead and taken the tie. At this point, as the Broncos were moving on that drive, I was, for the first time, thinking, oh, I'd be fine with the tie. Not, like, stoked, but I would be okay with it. Well, the Broncos were not. Gary Kubiak was not. Brandon McManus goes out, lines up a 62-yard field goal, and just tried to hit it too hard and missed it badly. So then the Chiefs get the ball back. They have a minute to score. You have one timeout. They needed to get, like I said, maybe 20, 25 yards to get a Santos field goal, and they win the game. At this point, I didn't know what I was watching anymore. This whole game was so insane. So the Chiefs get the ball on the Denver 48-yard line. First down, free play. Denver jumped off sides, but the free play didn't do much. Then on first and 5, Tyreek Hill gets 11. The Chiefs go up and spike the ball. Then on second and 10, Denver jumped off sides again. No flag called this time. So Alex Smith was under some significant pressure, and Alex Smith hit Travis Kelce to get down to a 34-yard field goal on that play. Again, for all of the struggles that Travis Kelce had in this game. He showed up late. That pass going for 16 yards, again, getting to the Denver, getting from the Denver 32, I believe, to the Denver 16. That's how math works, right? Getting from the 32 to the 16, getting into borderline chip shot field goal range. A 34-yard field goal attempt from Cairo Santos, and it was not well kicked. The ball just, he mentioned what happened. I think he just said he felt like he kicked it well, but he just started too close to the left upright. Well, as the ball was going up, if it was any farther of a field goal, this game ends in a tie, because it was just spinning left, moving left, and eventually then hits the left upright just enough on the inside bit of the pole to bounce through the uprights. And the kick bounced off the upright really hard and went in. And that's how the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Denver Broncos in Denver 30-27. I've never been more excited to see your takes and takeaways from this game. After each and every game, I will ask you on Twitter at JBBriscoe, JBBRISCO, two B's in a row there, or you can just go on Twitter and search Joshua Briscoe. I'll ask you for what you learned from this game, what you saw, and what you'll take away from it, what your hot takes may or may not be, depending on how the game went. And there are a lot of them today, and deservedly so. I'm going to try to make sure I get to everything that I can here, try to make sure I get everybody, but my timeline and my mentions after this game were insane. And if you were on Twitter during the game, it was a blast. It was infuriating whenever we were all mad together about how bad the offense was, but overall, watching the game with Twitter is a lot of fun, especially with you guys who listen to the show. Let's start off with Ty DeClair. His first take and takeaway said that was a must-win game, and Kansas City pulled it off. Proud of the organization as a whole, but man, don't do me like that. Yeah, don't do me like that. He said Casey would also need to follow the 2015 Denver game plan to have a shot at the Super Bowl with this offense, though. And they might. You might be right. With the current state of the offense, I don't think they can win the Super Bowl, period. I don't. They could have 11 Justin Houstons, or just, you know, four Marcus Peters, or two Marcus Peters, and a couple of... Just leave Ron Parker and Eric Berry, I guess, and maybe two Justin Houstons and three Dontari Poe's, whatever. The defense could be made of robots, and the Chiefs wouldn't win the Super Bowl with this offense as it's currently playing. Whenever Jeremy Maclin comes back, Alex Smith seems much more comfortable with Maclin on the field, and the Chiefs have to let Smith play the hurry-up more. And I say the Chiefs, I mean Andy Reid. Andy Reid's not really about letting Smith do things. And someone needs to convince Andy Reid that he wants to run the hurry up more. That's the key right now. From Andrew Dowdswell, who's been on the show before, the official UK correspondent of Roughing the Kicker. He talked about Brexit in the offseason. He said, it's now 5:30. It will take me an hour to get home, and I won't be able to sleep because of the stress to my heart, but it was worth it, and I have to work at 9. This is, I think, the sentiment of every international Chiefs fan, and it makes me happy. I don't mind spending time on the happy, I'm going to die tomorrow tweets whenever it's following up a victory. From Johnny Carver, at Carver Johnny, all caps, typing gibberish, hashtag RTKTT. Uh-huh. That's exactly right. That's exactly how I feel, too. From Nathan Briscoe, at N8 Briscoe. That's my cousin. Said, watching the Chiefs get a W tonight makes the L I'm going to take on my test tomorrow morning that much more worth it. This is gospel right there. I've got an essay, a gigantic essay that's worth like 20% of my class grade that needs to be really well researched. It's due on Thursday. I haven't really started it. I would have worked on it on Sunday night if the Chiefs weren't playing on Sunday Night Football, but I didn't. And now I'm exhausted. And it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. But it's worth it. So I'm going to take the L on the homework and get the W on Sunday Night Football. From Dylan Abersold, Tyreek. That is all. Tyreek Hill is going to become Kansas. And that, man, if you had a problem with the Chiefs drafting Tyreek Hill, which I think everybody did on some level, maybe, and depending on where you stay with Tyreek Hill now, this is going to be a discouraging phrase, discouraging bit of news to give you, but I think Tyreek Hill just became the face of the Kansas City Chiefs, along with Justin Houston and maybe Marcus Peters. I think those three guys right now are the face of the team. And it makes, and they should be, talent-wise, but in prime time, Justin Houston wreaked havoc. Nationally, Marcus Peters is plenty well talked about, and Tyreek Hill had a coming out party with a rushing touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a kick return touchdown. He is such an incredible weapon. I think we're going to see him become, I think we've seen him become, at least for this season, maybe the face of the 2016 Chiefs, because he's been productive, but now he was just an MVP in prime time. That's how stars are made, especially in you know, semi-small markets like Kansas City, where the national coverage outside of national primetime games, national coverage can be a little bit sparse, which frankly I don't care about, and I don't care for whenever Chiefs fans get really indignant about why isn't the national media talking about the Chiefs. A couple of reasons. Sorry for this tangent. A couple of reasons. One of which being the Chiefs generally play boring offense. And they did in this game too. Tyreek Hill was the interesting thing. That's why he's going to become, to some extent, a star. He's going to become a small star that could grow, certainly. The Chiefs play offense the most boring possible way. They're not very flashy. They're not very fun, at least without Justin Houston. And this game was very fun for Chiefs fans because it ended in a victory. But it was not a well-played offensive game. It was a well-played defensive game, but that's not very sexy. So they're not all that interesting from a national perspective. Also, you shouldn't care. As long as I'm talking about the Chiefs in a way that you think is reflecting the team well, that is good analysis, as long as you think that the local Kansas City media is covering the team well, is analyzing the team well, even, you know, I'm talking from beat writers like Adam Teicher and Therese Paylor to, you know, the 610 and 810 radio guys in Kansas City. I'm going in decreasing levels of respectability, I think, to people on podcasts. We have Chiefs media, and you have local media that are going to appreciate what the Chiefs are. You should appreciate what those people are doing. This isn't for me. I don't really have a complex about it. But don't get yourself caught up in, oh, the national media doesn't respect, the national media wants to talk about the Raiders. The Raiders are way more fun to watch. I mean, that's like irrefutable, right? Offensively. And even having a bad defense makes teams they're playing more fun to watch. Derek Carr is going to do big things often enough to be interesting. And they do it throughout the games. And again, as their defense gives up big points, the games are high scoring and back and forth and fun. The Chiefs don't play like that. I think it's just about that simple. Although the Chiefs have some other part of them that it's just not quite as storied or quite as interesting on a large scale, I suppose. And the Raiders do have that. There's a mystique about the Raiders. It's just not there for the Chiefs. And man, you just shouldn't care at all. Like, whenever the Ravens went and won the Super Bowl with Joe Flacco, did you mind? Do you think the Baltimore minded if they weren't getting a ton of national coverage? They just went out and won a Super Bowl. No, they were a forgettable team. They had Ray Lewis. The Chiefs have Justin Houston, but they were a forgettable team that won a Super Bowl. I don't think anybody in Baltimore has too been out of shape about the media coverage there. And again, we have the local coverage, I think, to try to make sure you're getting a proper amount of coverage and analysis. From Keyshawn Brown. He said, Raheem Nunez, Rochez, whoa, Houston back, lots of injuries, Reed and Alex bounce back, Hill was huge, Gaines felt the pain, and Peters allowed 19 yards. That equals a win. From Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88, Houston and Ford are going to be a nightmare for offenses. Holly looked like he could spell 50 and 55 and make some noise. Big win. All right, Derek. I just talked about the Ravens. I'll take a little bit of crow also. You are not even, I think all of my criticisms for D4 have all been completely fair and completely justified, but I guess more credit to you. You were optimistic about D4 long before I was, And I think you're buying in early on. Again, I don't back down for any of my criticisms and critiques at the time. And Dee Ford, after watching Justin Houston against the Broncos, you should see how many things Dee Ford still has to continue to improve on and to continue to grow into. But he's obviously the second best pass rusher on this team. He's probably one of the top 10 pass rushers in football right now, Dee Ford. Whenever he gets back, yes, Houston and Ford on the field at the same time is going to be nightmarish. And then a fresh Tom Bahali comes in through the last few games of the season and hopefully into the playoffs. The Chiefs are going to have an incredible trio of pass rushers there. I could not be more excited. From Randy Singh: the Chiefs took advantage of the opportunities given to us. The team held their composure and fought through. They did, and in a way where I don't know how many teams hold their composure there. The offense was so bad, and they never stopped. They never stopped thinking, I guess, on some extent, that they could make a big play at the end, which they did. They made a lot of those plays to drive down the field in absolute dire situations. From Calvin Esslinger: he said, my thoughts, Tyreek is now loved despite pending conviction. Alex Smith is Jekyll and Hyde. One thing on Tyreek Hill, and whenever Tyreek Hill had his first score of the day, NBC started talking about his domestic abuse when, again, he choked and or he hit and strangled his pregnant girlfriend and got a 3-year deferred sentence, and he never actually served time. Nothing is pending anymore. It's done. His conviction is done, and he was convicted of this assault, and I think it is good that NBC was not afraid to bring that up, because that is a part of who Tyreek Hill is, not just as a Chief and as a guy who dropped in the draft and as a guy who the Chiefs took a risk on, but also just like that's what he is. It's what he did. That should be out there. I've said forever that if he muffs a kickoff, people are going to go, oh, cut the woman beater. And if he has a 3-touchdown game against the Broncos in prime time, he's going to become a star. And at this point, there's no sympathy anywhere for Tyreek Hill. He has to live with this stamp on him, where for a very long time, maybe forever, he's going to be, oh yeah, that explosive guy in the Chiefs who beat his pregnant girlfriend. And that's what he should be. I said a few weeks ago, someone was tweeting about how he had done everything right since the conviction and we needed to move on. And that's ridiculous. He hasn't done anything since the conviction, which isn't particularly good or bad. It's just not bad. I also haven't hit anyone since Tyreek Hill got convicted for hitting his girlfriend. That's not me doing everything right. That's just me not hitting anyone. So I don't know. I've run this take into the ground a few times, but it is all coming true. If Hill has good games, then he's going to be like that. Oh, that guy the Chiefs took a risk on, nice. And he's going to help the Chiefs win. If he makes the Chiefs lose, if he gives the Chiefs bad field position, if he muffs a punt, if he muffs a kickoff, whatever. That it's going to come back up again. At this point, though, Hill has become a huge part on this offense and a big part of the special teams, obviously, but I would say a bigger part of the offense. I hope we don't forget his past, and it bothers me a little bit that he never was more proactive in being apologetic and trying to set himself up to do more for maybe other domestic abuse victims. That bothers me a little bit, but I don't think any of that's going to change anymore. So I think we have to decide universally, or not universally, but I guess individually, are we okay rooting for that guy? And how do you do that if you are? Does being okay rooting for him make you some sort of enabler? Does it make you just a Chiefs fan? How does that work? I think that's decided for individuals. And for me at this point, It's rooting for him as a player because he's on the Chiefs and he's making big plays for the Chiefs. I'm rooting for that. I am. But I'm also not ever going to pretend that his past disappeared every time he crosses the goal line. From Tony Tone, said, where do you see the momentum shift in this game happening? I just went through the whole game, and I don't know. It's because the Broncos, obviously there's no momentum change through the first quarter, for the first three quarters. Even then, in the fourth quarter, it goes from being 16-10 Chiefs to being 24-16 Broncos. There wasn't a change in momentum. The Chiefs has got the ball back with 3 minutes and no timeouts and drove for a touchdown, a two-point conversion. There wasn't a change in momentum. It was that drive was just a total outlier for everything the Chiefs offense had done all day. That drive was totally, totally against the character of everything else they had done. By far the most plays they had had on a drive, the most yards they had driven all day, and an offensive touchdown for the second time. I don't think there was a momentum shift. I think they just, at the end, buckled up and beat the Broncos. Also, Tony said, "Well, all the injuries to extremely impactful players, how do you think we will look down the stretch, as those guys come back? The defense is going to be absolutely ferocious." I talked about that already a little bit. Jeremy Maclin coming back is the one that I'm probably underrating a little, because he wasn't very good before he got hurt, but Alex Smith just looks more comfortable when Jeremy Maclin is on the field. So I think his return will also be impactful and will hopefully get Alex Smith a little bit more confidence and make him willing to be a little bit riskier with the ball, maybe even just because he believes that he can force one to Jeremy Maclin. Either he's going to catch it or no one's going to catch it. But usually he's going to catch it. I think with all the stuff I talked about the defense so far and the turn to Jeremy Maclin, the Chiefs should only be getting better from here. That's what should terrify people, is they're doing this with some major, major injuries. And man, I wish Alan Bailey was coming back. And by the way, I don't know if I've done this yet in this show. I don't think I have talked about Raheem Nunez-Rochez, another incredible game. Kendall Reyes, some really spectacular plays. Dontari Poe left with an injury. Jay Howard was out. Chris Jones played well. Just some truly, truly incredible depth across the defensive line. The Chiefs, for all of the struggles on offense and all of the lack of depth they have, say it, the wide receiver, the talent they have on defense, especially on the defensive line. Jarvis Jenkins, by the way, he ended up playing a lot of snaps, I think, after Poe's injury. Man, I don't have a point of reference on the planet for Jarvis Jenkins. He was a second round draft pick in 2011. He's a veteran who the Chiefs picked up. Whenever you're talking about guys who the Chiefs pick up off the street, Raheem Nunez-Rochez was cut by the Chiefs early in the season, and Kendall Reyes has been bouncing around in between getting playing time and not. Another guy, another veteran, a second-round pick from 2012 by San Diego. Jenkins and Reyes are talented, high draft pick guys who never stuck anywhere. And Raheem Nunez-Rochez is a late-round Chiefs draft pick that's bounced around the Chiefs organization. And they played spectacularly. They all made plays. They all held up in different times. That wasn't flawless by any means. The Broncos' offense had some success on them. But I think it's a testament to, more than anything, I think it's a testament to Bob Sutton and the defense's scheme, because they're plugging in so many different types of guys who are being productive on the defensive line, which there's a question a little bit later on, I think, about Dontari Poe that I'll get to, that I think that continues on. So don't forget that point there and the depth of the defensive line. Tony, one more, or two more. He said, "Where does this win rank among Alex Smith's four-year tenure with the Chiefs?" Second? I guess? The second best win behind the Texans playoff game? And not because of Alex Smith. This was not Alex... Boy, I hope this makes sense. This was not Alex Smith's second best game as a Chief. Not even close. Alex Smith had, like, two good drives when they mattered, of course, but two good drives. But if you wanted to change the question to where does this rank among Andy Reid Chief wins, or maybe Bob Sutton Chief wins, I think it's probably second behind the Texans playoff victory. And it was an ugly, ugly game with no offense. One more from Tony. So I guess me and you are the only ones saying that it's still not Alex Smith's fault. I think that's still true to a pretty large extent to where he's just being Alex Smith, and he needs to be told exactly what to do. And Andy Reid is the one who has to be more aggressive in telling him how to go about being a quarterback. Does that mean that he is a weak quarterback that, you know, has to be marionetted by Andy Reid? Yeah, it does. That's also what Andy Reid wanted. And that's what Alex Smith is. Now it's up to Andy Reid to be a good puppeteer. And Andy Reid has been a bad puppeteer for a while now. And that's what Alex Smith is. He's a puppet. Mark Keller said the Broncos held on every pass play. And he's like, really, I am the last guy, I think, to go, referees! But it really, like, with Justin Houston, especially, and a right tackle getting outmatched, although Stevenson held it better than Cimbrella did, what else are you going to do other than try to hook him? And Tomba gets held all the time. The interior defensive lineman got held plenty. I mentioned earlier DJ Alexander was held a couple times. Like, really, if the refs were calling holding penalties by the definition of holding just about every play, I think they could have called the Broncos for something. I mean, I truly, and I'm sure the Chiefs got away with some too. Dealing with Von Miller is no easy task. But Mitchell Schwartz was doing a great job with his hands. Somebody tweeted during the game, he said, Mitchell Schwartz is doing as good a job with Von Miller as I've ever seen anybody do, and it just doesn't matter. He's just that good. From Matthew Livingston at Matrix System, which is still my favorite Twitter handle, I think, on this website, said, I'm in legitimate shock, too. I'm still not believing it until they show it a few more times, like, for real, show it again. The field goal, especially, is just something I don't understand. Like, Santos had been so good, and he was missing it. He missed it. And it just bounced off of the upright and went in. It was... ugh. From Local Sun, Rakinas Roches, Philip Gaines, Alex Smith is a winner. Give him the tools, he just wins with them. I wish Alex Smith wouldn't wait so long to be, you know, just a winner. I really was at a point in this game where I think could Nick Foles be worse with this philosophy? Maybe Nick Foles will take shots. Yeah, they kind of go against the sensibilities of Andy Reid, which is what the Chiefs needed there, because Andy Reid and Alex Smith combining had absolutely zero aggressiveness. So I'm backing away from Alex Smith as a winner. I'm backing away from that bandwagon a little bit. But I think if Andy Reid can just trust him a little bit, if Reid can trust him a little bit and can be a little bit more aggressive, then I think we have a chance to see good Alex Smith again. From Chiefly Bacon at Three Gravy Cats, Bob Sutton is vastly underrated. What he did with only two starters at 100% is a dang miracle. I could not have said it better myself. Yes, it's a dang miracle. What Sutton did, I'm giving him some credit for the production of the backups on the defensive line. They're doing it with one pass rusher. By the way, Eric Berry said that Justin Houston is not 100% yet. I think it's pretty obvious that Justin Houston's not 100% yet. How could he be? He's been in two football games, and it's been a calendar year almost. In the last, like, 10 months, he's been in two football games. He's not in 100% Justin Houston shape yet, which means he has potential to get better and then to be matched up across from D Ford. Ugh. Gonna be terrifying. But yes, I cannot agree more. Bob Sutton, dang miracles. Michael Dewey just said, I don't have any words right now. And yeah, I didn't either at the time, and I thought I might not have any for this show, but we're almost at an hour and a half, so maybe I do. And then from James Baker, unbelievable, still in shock. Had my doubts going into Mile High with all the injuries. Alex was clutch, and Tyreek and Houston were amazing. Yeah, there are not enough superlatives for how good Justin Houston was in this game. And Justin Henderson, by the way, pointed out he was thinking about those six keys. He's the one who was saying, thinking about those pretty much 5 out of 6, which I'm glad for, and I will obviously toot my own horn. Also, Justin said, by secondary, I mean, of course, that one member of the secondary. Philip Gaines did not hold up in this game. Marcus Peters was just not even unstoppable. He was untargetable. Also, Scott Chasen at S. Chasen CJ, a must follow for Jayhawks fans. I said, give me your Chiefs take and takeaways. And he said, I think if I were rich, I would want a personal chef. That's really the only chef take I have. And followed up by saying, oh, you said Chiefs take. My bad. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for that. Last RTKTT, again, always, hashtag RTKTT, and respond to me on Twitter, after the game from Thomas Harrell. He said, has Hill become our Antonio Brown? Which feels like such a dumb question until you realize the answer might be maybe. I think he might be more Emmanuel Sanders. I think he is DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson is the comparison that I've heard here on Twitter that I like the most. Physically, they're similarly sized. They can both stretch the field, but they're both dangerous in all sorts of space. Both incredibly dangerous kick returners. Both of them, you can see getting some jet sweeps and turning up the field, always demanding major coverage. And also, I think the whole Chiefs offense gets better, by the way, with Tyreek Hill's emergence, just because offenses are going to be noticeably afraid of him now. He has to be watched, even though the Chiefs don't ever use him deep, which I think is a shame. You know, don't use him deep enough, because they don't go deep enough. But I don't think the Antonio Brown comparison is where the money is. I think it's DeSean Jackson. Think DeSean Jackson in an Andy Reid offense, where DeSean Jackson was very, very good. I think that's who Tyreek Hill just might be. That is going to do it for an hour and a half long episode of the Rough and the Kicker Chiefs podcast on ArrowheadAddict.com and on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can always get to me on Twitter at JBBriscoe, Facebook.com/RTK Show. Or if you want to support the show financially, you can do that at Patreon.com/RTK. Thank you for sticking around for a full 90 minutes of recapping what happened on Sunday Night Football. I enjoyed every minute of it, every minute of the podcast, not every minute of the game. The first 45 minutes or so of actual game time were completely miserable. But now the Kansas City Chiefs are 3-0 in the AFC West. They have a chance to catch up to the Raiders, to have every tiebreaker they want if they pull off these AFC West games. They could be a real threat here. Speaking of real threats, the Chiefs are going to have to deal with the Falcons. I'll be back in a few days to preview that. I'm not super optimistic, but at this point, who knows what the Chiefs are capable of? Apparently I don't. Thanks for listening as always. Bye, Mom.